Dark Winter Nights is produced with support from the University of Alaska Fairbanks Communication and Journalism Department, UAF Kojo. Tell great stories. On today's episode of Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska, David Best goes into the woods to have a look for some property he bought, sight unseen, so he could get away from the hustle and bustle of civilization, only to find himself dying to get back to the hustle and bustle of civilization.
And there across the clearing, I saw it. It was my pants. I had made one big, gigantic circle.
Lost in the Woods, up next on Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska. I'm Rob Prince. Wilderness in Alaska is deceptively dangerous. You don't need to get stranded in a plane crash or drag yourself ashore from a sinking boat to get hopelessly lost. You can take a short walk from your car and in a moment be well out of sight of help and beyond earshot, with no significant landmarks to guide you back. The dense black spruce trees completely block any view you might have of the horizon, and there's nothing to climb up to get to a higher vantage point. The uneven, mushy, muskeg forest floor can conceal any trace of your footsteps, making it impossible for the average person to even retrace their path. Even an Army veteran with survival training can find himself drawn into the woods and hopelessly lost in a surprisingly short amount of time, as was the case for today's storyteller, David Best. He shared this story at our amazing April 2018 live event in Fairbanks. Many people have been asking when that show will be available. Well, here's your first taste of it. Here's David Best.
It was the summer of 2013, one of the hottest summers in Alaska for quite some time. I had bought some land in Anderson back in 2005, sight unseen. So I decided one day I was going to go and visit this land, put my feet on it, you know, make sure I owned it, make sure there were any squatters or anything on the land. So the day started out normal, you know, drove down to Anderson. Anderson subdivision is past Anderson, about 75 miles on the Parks Highway. You cross over the Coghill Bridge, and then you make a right on Colby Road. So as I made the right on Colby Road, I saw an elderly couple at the mailbox collecting their mail. So I stopped and asked for directions, and I showed them the map and showed them that I owned the land and everything, just to be on the safe side. And they gave me directions. So feeling very proud of myself, knowing where I was going, I drove off down this dirt road. I made a right, a left, another right. And then I came to the road where it supposedly ran parallel to where my property was at. As I'm driving down the road, I'm all happy. Yes, I'm finally going to see my land. And then all of a sudden, the road stopped. The road was on the map, but where the road stopped was totally different than what the map indicated. So I got out the truck and I'm looking at the map and I'm trying to figure out where I was at and everything. And at that time, a guy who lived at the end of that road, he came out and he started talking to me and everything. And he showed me one of the landmarkers. And we calculated that my land was about 3/4 of a mile away from that landmarker. There were supposed to be landmarkers every half a mile. So feeling confident about where I'm going and figuring all I have to do is walk in a straight line. How hard can that be? And the little guy on my shoulder is like, oh, I don't know, but I'm like, be quiet. So now I'm back to the truck. I let my Heinz 57 out. A Heinz 57 is a mutt. That's what they call mutts in Louisiana. He's brindle because he has Staffordshire Terrier. He has the head of a lab, and he sheds like the chow he is. And he has like an Australian herding dog and some other terriers in him, which totally confuses him. He doesn't know if to hunt voles or if to just run and play. So anyway, we let him out, pulled out the bug spray, sprayed myself down, got my weapon, got some water, got my maps. How hard can this be? Boy, was I around. So I set off from the marker in a straight line, and I was in the Army, so I had a pay skunk, so I'm using my pay scout. And then about 100 meters along this clearing, I came to this marsh, and then it dawned on me, that's why the road stopped. And at that time, the guy on my shoulder was going, turn back. I'm like, nah, nobody likes a quitter. So I pushed on through the marsh, and then I came to this wall of black spruce and dead underbrush. And then again, it was like, time to turn back. This is your last chance. But I felt confident. I had my weapon, I had water, and I had my trusty sidekick, Calla. So I pushed into the black spruce, and I'm walking, keeping my pace count. But as I'm looking at the ground, all I can see is bear prints and bear scat. Not deterred, I'm going to find this marker. This is going to be the day that I find this property. I've owned this property for 8 years and I've never seen it. So I pushed on, and then about an hour into my journey, I figured I should be at the marker. So I started looking around, there's no sign in this marker. So I figured maybe my pace count was off because the dense underbrush and everything. So I pushed forward about another 100, 150 meters. And there was nothing. So now I'm getting scared. So I'm starting sweating profusely. And I'm drinking water like crazy. And I'm searching for this marker. Then at that point, I was like, David, it's time to turn around. It's time to go back. So in my mind, I had walked a straight line. So all I had to do was do a about face and go back the way I came. Boy, was I wrong. I was totally lost and didn't know where to go. So I came to an I Day, and everybody knows this I Day. I pulled out my weapon and started firing rounds in the air and yelling and waiting to see if anybody replied or if anybody fired a shot. Patch, yelled, waited. Now I'm like 10 rounds in, and I'm like not hearing anybody. This time I'm just dripping in sweat, drinking water, and by this time, the mosquito repellent had worn off. And the Alaskan bird started to attack me. In swarms, and I mean, they're all over my face and everything, and I was totally lost. With all the bear scat and bear sign on the ground, I decided to save one round for myself. That's what we did in Iraq. We always said if we got into a firefight and we ran out of ammo, we were going to save one round for ourselves. We were never going to be taken alive. So I was like, I'm not going to be eaten alive by a bear. So I saved this one round for myself. So at that time, I'm out of water, and all I can hear is the beating of my heart and the panting of my dog and the squishiness of the sweat in my boots. Now my boots are saturated. Finally got to the point where I started to feel weak, so I took my boots off and just chucked them. Took my socks off and just chucked them. So I'm still walking and I'm walking, and by this time now it's like 3 hours into this ordeal and I don't have a clue where I'm at. So finally I came to this clearing and I'm standing there and I'm trying to figure out where to go. And by this time my pants were just soaking wet and I took my pants off. Unchucked him. So now I'm out there and just Under Armour shirt and some spandex shorts, barefooted with a weapon in my hand. Mosquitoes all over me, you know, all cut and scratched up. But at least I still had one round in my weapon. As fate would have it, as I left the clearing, my hand with the weapon in it bumped a tree and the round went off. And I remember looking up to the sky and saying, "You're a funny guy." So I pushed on past the clearing, and at this time now it's 3.5, almost 4 hours. And I'm pushing through the brush. And it was about an hour, it seemed like I had gone like 1.5 miles, and I came to this clearing. And there across the clearing, I saw it. It was my pants. I had made one big, gigantic circle. Only if I can walk a straight line the way I make circles, I would have been golden. So dejected, got my pants, put them on. Found the closest tree and just sat down. And I'm starting to make peace with myself that I'm not going to make it out of here. So a lot of things started crossing my mind. You know, I had cheated death so many times. Once when my mom was 6 months pregnant with me, a rumor started that I wasn't my father's child, and he was an abusive alcoholic, so he punched her in her stomach. And when I was born, I had a blood clot in my back from where he had punched her so hard. It had transferred to me. And then there was another time when I was in Iraq, and I encountered a 7 Series BMW packed with 1,000 pounds of explosives. And I had to have plastic surgery on my face. Even this sling today is related to one of the injuries I have. And I only have 9 fingers. But the good thing about having 9 fingers, you get 10% off manicures. So as I'm sitting there, my dog next to me, I'm envisioning 3-4 years from now, somebody's gonna be out walking in the woods and come across my skeleton with my dog just laying right next to me. And is at that point, a calm came over me. I had made peace with myself. If this is the way I was going to go, this is the way I was going to go. And as I'm sitting there, I'm looking down, and there's these red, orange, yellowish berries. And I'm like, I'm going to die anyway, so why not take the chance? So now I'm popping these berries like Skittles. They have a bitter taste, and they're leaving a chalky taste in your mouth, but I wasn't eating them for the taste. I was just trying to get some fluids into me. And while I'm there, I'm talking to my grandmothers, my grandfathers, and I'm telling my kids, "Hey, I love you. See you on the other side." You know, thinking about all the guys I've lost and, you know, saying "until Valhalla." That's our saying, basically. And then it dawned on me, the constant thing that was still there was the sun. And I was like, I can follow the sun. Because that's, it was high in the sky, because I was walking from tree to tree and, you know, trying to navigate out. And I, you know, with renewed vigor now, I'm ready to go eating all these berries. And I set out on my way. About an hour into the journey, now we're about 7 hours into the journey, into this whole ordeal, I look back and Callum, my dog, is just laying there. And I was like, come on, Calla, let's go. We can't stay here. And he just looked at me and he would not move. And it was at that point, I had three choices. Either stay there with him and enjoy whatever was to come, carry him, which I couldn't, or leave him. Being a soldier, you never leave anybody behind. But I had to make that decision to leave my dog. And I did. With mosquitoes all over me, scratches, scrapes, dehydrated, smelling like the outdoors, and a heavy heart, I pushed on.
Trust me, animal lovers, don't touch that dial. It's all going to be okay. We'll be back with David Best in just a moment. This is Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska. I'm Rob Prince. Ever miss an episode of Dark Winter Nights, or maybe you just discovered us and want to get all caught up? You can subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can find links on our website, darkwinternights.com. Just click on radio/podcast. That's where you can also listen to every episode we've ever put out. You can also subscribe to our e-newsletter to stay informed about upcoming episodes, live events, and other Dark Winter Nights news. When we left David Best, he was lost in the woods in Anderson looking for property he had purchased sight unseen. He'd just been forced to leave his exhausted dog behind and continue his desperate search for a way back to civilization. Here's David.
I had gone about a mile and a half, 2 miles, when I saw this cabin off in the distance. I didn't get too excited because I'd seen 3 or 4 cabins before and 4 or 5 road systems, but it was all in my imagination. So to me, this probably was another mirage. But as I got closer, I realized it was an actual cabin. And I walked up to the cabin and tried the door. And the door was unlocked. And I crawled inside to get away from the mosquitoes. Now, as I'm there laying on the cabin floor, I look over and I can see a bag of charcoal. Now, I'm thinking back, I don't know if those berries were poisonous or not, but I read somewhere charcoal kind of neutralizes poison. So I went in the bag and took up one of the briquettes and started chewing down. Yummy, not. But as I'm laying there, I'm thinking, I had just left my dog, and I was heartbroken. In a daze, crying, I just laid there. And then as some time passed, I was like, I can't stay here. I got to get up and move. So I exited the cabin, and I'm standing there, and I'm thinking about Calla. Did something happen? Did the bears get him? Did he pass? Whatever. And then at that point, a big gush of wind came out of nowhere and just blew across the clearing. And then there was some rustling in the bush. And my first thought was bear. So here I am standing, barefooted, empty weapon, and I started to retreat to the cabin. And then, in a flash of moment, out came bounding like a bunny rabbit, this brindle-collared lab, straight to the clearing. I was about 2 miles away from him. I don't know how he found me. Maybe it was my smell. I don't know, but he came directly to exactly the same spot I was at. So, all happy and excited, we proceeded to travel down the road, and we came to this cabin. And there was a car outside, a vehicle outside, so I went up and knocked. This guy came out, and I'm standing there with a dog, barefooted, an army t-shirt, and just some army pants, looking like all hell, mosquitoes circling all around me, all scratched up and everything. And I was like, could I have some water, please? He disappeared in the cabin, and he came back with a pitcher of water and some glass. That was the best water ever. Me and Calla drank to our heart's content. And then while I was drinking, he looked at me and he was like, you're a lucky fellow. He was like, if my wife was home by herself, she would have shot you on sight. Thanking him for the water, I got directions and headed on down the road. I eventually came to another cabin, which was the cabin of the elderly couple I had met earlier at the mailboxes. So they invited me in, we got some more water, and he gave me a ride back to my truck in his 4x4. Getting back to my truck, there was a neighbor, the neighbor was there, he had enlisted the help of another neighbor, and they were out searching the woods for me. Too embarrassed to even say anything, I was like, I'm fine. They're looking at me and I'm just I'm good, I'm back, I made it to the truck. So thanked them for their help, got in the truck, and headed back to Fairbanks. On the way back, I stopped in Nenana, bought a whole boatload of snacks, and just feasted on the way back. I never went back down to that property. But some years later, last year, I decided to go and try my hand again. This time I was better prepared. And as I'm following this road, I'm coming to another dead end. But on this big spruce tree, it said, no trespassing. So as I pulled in to turn around, this old guy, he came out, and he's like, come, come. And he waved me. And as I pulled onto the property, I could tell it was him and a couple of the neighbors. They were just sitting down, shooting the breeze, having some beers. And I told him I was down here looking for some property. And then out of the blue, he was like, you're the legend. You're right up there with Bigfoot and Sasquatch. There's this story about this big 6'6" black guy that came down here looking looking for some property. I never found it, but he disappeared. And people that never actually saw him taught the other neighbors were, you know, blowing smoke, so to speak. I looked at him and said, yes, I'm real. He's like, have a beer. So I drank the beer and we talked, and his property was only about half a mile away from mine. He said I could use it as a base and everything in order to get to my property and everything. Later that year, though, I found out that one of the neighbors had gone around and pulled up some of the property markers because he didn't want too many people in that vicinity. I would like to think that my property marker was one of the property markers pulled up. Maybe, maybe not. But that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
David Best. He shared that story at our April 2018 Dark Winter Nights live event in Fairbanks. Thanks for listening to this episode of Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska. Today's episode was edited by myself, Rob Prince. Audio recording of David's story by Alaska Universal Productions. Story consultation by Lori Neufeld. This is our last episode of our third season, and it's become sort of a tradition to end each season with the Alaska flag song. At least I'm trying to make it a tradition. So, here it is, as performed by the Alaska Chamber Singers, led by conductor David Hagen.
It's
Great North Star with its steady light, or land and sea a beacon bright, Alaskan's flag to Alaskan's dear, the simple flag of the last frontier. Remember, these are the stories we tell up here in Alaska on Dark Winter Nights. I'm Rob Prince.